WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's been almost 2 years since Texas Governor Greg Abbott began busing migrants to northern cities, including Chicago and New York. Overnight, city officials, nonprofits, and volunteers have scrambled to figure out how to support thousands of new arrivals who are not legally allowed to work and provide for themselves. While over 40,000 migrants in Chicago may seem like a lot, there are millions more in Colombia, Venezuela's neighbor. And the South American country has implemented policies geared towards integrating migrants into Colombian society. WBEZ criminal justice reporter Chip Mitchell traveled to South America to find out how Venezuelans are faring under the Colombian government's policies and what lessons Chicago can learn. This reporting trip's part of the Democracy Solutions Project, a collaboration between WBEZ, the Chicago Sun-Times, and the University of Chicago's Center for Effective Government, with funding support from the Pulitzer Center. I sat down with Chip to hear his takeaways. Now, he says part of the reason why he went to Colombia was because this country, despite being much poorer than the U.S., has rolled out the welcome mat. So I asked him what gave him that impression. Here's Chip.
Well, really, initially, just by looking at the numbers, almost 3 million Venezuelan migrants are living in Colombia. So that's more than four times as many as are in the United States. Now, of those 3 million, 2 million have received legal status. It's called the Temporary Protection Permit, and it lays paths to formal jobs, health care, pensions, education, and the financial system. And Sasha, some things are really remarkable here. Colombia, it's a much smaller country than the United States. Its population is just 52 million, so that's less than a sixth of the U.S. population. And it's mostly undeveloped. Colombia's economy is less than 4% the size of the U.S. economy.
And so what has this response meant for Venezuelan migrants living in Colombia? Are they finding a better life?
Well, as good as they had it before Venezuela's economy collapsed, for the most part, no. But a lot better than what they were experiencing after the meltdown in Venezuela. So in our series, it's running on the radio all this week. We've got a big, long magazine story online with the audio stories as well. We hear some success stories, people who had lost everything in Venezuela, their jobs, all their savings because of hyperinflation. Mm-hmm. They get to Colombia and they're starting with a lot lower standard of living. If they have skills, maybe they're working outside their field and several rungs lower in the labor market. But they're surviving now. They're eating. Their kids have clothes. They've got a roof over their heads. They have access to schooling and health care. They're steadily rebuilding their lives.
Yeah, let's dig more into that, because the thing is, we often hear concerns that, you know, making life easier for migrants in the U.S., that could encourage more people to want to come here. And giving them a path to jobs, that's going to hurt American-born workers. So talk about what the impact's been on the economy in Colombia.
Well, there's this really interesting International Monetary Fund study. It says integrating Venezuelan migrants into the formal labor market could expand Colombia's GDP by almost 4%. And we're not talking about decades from now. We're talking about by 2030. That's just a few years. Now, I spoke with economists there in Colombia. The influx so far has not lowered wages or the number of jobs for Colombians in the formal market. The informal market, now we're talking about everything from domestic labor to street vendors to agricultural piece work, day laborers. Mm-hmm. In that informal market, Venezuelans have been a drag on wages, but just a slight drag, just about 1%, and also just a slight drag on workforce participation. But even migrants with informal jobs, there are a lot of benefits. They pay sales taxes that fund social programs for low-income Colombians.
Okay.
They've also helped turn around parts of the economy, so including Colombia's world-famous coffee industry. Venezuelans are now picking most of the beans. And Sasha, while migrants may be exerting downward pressure on wages for domestic work, more Colombian families can now afford the help. So this frees up, for example, some high-skilled Colombians, especially women, to work outside the home.
So in a large part, this is working, this arrangement. But you found that xenophobia in Colombia is on the rise. But interestingly, Colombians who went to Venezuela decades ago seeking a better future often experienced prejudice and xenophobia. So how's it playing out now that it's reversed?
Yeah, it's funny because when a lot of Colombians went to Venezuela during Colombia's decades-long civil war as refugees. Many others went to Venezuela because of, you know, during one of the oil booms in Venezuela, and they could live comfortably there. But they faced a lot of xenophobia on the part of Venezuelans, mm-hmm. Being called all sorts of things and not treated all the time very well. And now the tables are turned. So when I was in Colombia, and I asked basically everyone I had contact with and everyone I was interviewing, and I heard all kinds of things about Venezuelans. And more often than not, I heard negative things about Venezuelans. So everything, you know, they're crowding out Colombian couriers and barbers. They're using up medical resources. Mm. They're stealing. They're pickpockets, and so on and on and on and on. The same things that Colombians, the same sorts of accusations that face Colombians in Venezuela. Now, a couple things are interesting, Sasha. A lot of these stigmas, they're gendered. So Venezuelan women, and I heard this over and over, they are typically accused of promiscuity and having sex as part of a transaction.
Oh, wow.
And then the men are often disparaged as thieves. And the other thing that's interesting is these same stigmas, these same gendered stigmas, follow the Venezuelans pretty much wherever they migrate in the hemisphere, all over South America and up to the United States, you know, as far away as Chicago. We hear some of these same stigmas.
That's true. That's true. Now, you and Sun-Times photographer Anthony Vasquez spent a lot of time reporting along that border between Colombia and Venezuela. And at one point, you ran into a group of people who were near the very beginning of their journey coming to the U.S. So talk about that.
Yeah, this was near Cúcuta. That's the big Colombian city on the Venezuelan border. It was a super hot day out. We were on the main road into the Colombia's interior toward the mountains out of Cúcuta. We saw it wasn't hard to spot them as migrants. There is a group of 12 people, mostly young people. They had backpacks. One was wheeling a suitcase. They were carrying in their arms blankets and coats, even though it was like the hottest day imaginable, because they're heading up into the mountains, high altitude, where it's really cold. We got them to stop basically and talk to us because we were handing out water, and we found a place, some shade to talk. And they were on foot, they said, because they couldn't afford bus tickets, let alone plane fares. So there's thousands and thousands and thousands of Venezuelans who've left the country on foot. They cross into Colombia. Sometimes they stay in Colombia. Sometimes they head to other South American countries. Sometimes they head north toward the United States. So they're known as caminantes, the Spanish word for walkers. So this group, they'd already been walking for 2 weeks, and they'd just made it past the border. They'd come all the way from their hometown near Caracas. And let's hear one of them. She's a 19-year-old named Melanie Oreste. So what she's saying there, they're just getting started. They already have torn socks. Melanie herself was wearing chanclas. They're basically Crocs. Mm-hmm. She misses having meals. Her toes already have blisters. They're just 2 weeks into what could be months of walking, Sasha.
Wow. So, Chip, what did they tell you about why they left Venezuela?
Well, it was like many other migrants I had interviewed. I got to hear specifically that from a 20-year-old. His name's Eder Torres.
Nada más el sueldo mínimo son $3. Y nada más un kilo de arroz vale $1.50. Te podrás imaginar. ¿Quién va a trabajar por $3?
Mensual.
Mensuales. ¿Quién va a trabajar por eso? Nadie.
No podemos.
So what he's saying here, the minimum wage in Venezuela, he said $3. It's actually $3.50 a month. And a kilo of rice, he says, costs $1.50. And he says nobody's going to work for that.
Mm. Do they know people in the U.S.? Did they tell you that?
Well, I asked where they were going, and there was a long pause. And finally, Eder says New York. So do you know anyone there? And there's no answer. They don't know anyone. They don't have any friends or contacts there. So they're just winging it. Sasha, you know, it wouldn't be a big surprise if we encountered this group one day in Chicago.
So they're heading to New York. They don't know anyone. I mean, any other information about what they plan on doing once they arrive?
Well, one thing in their mind is they've all left family behind, and they're thinking about them all the time. So let's hear Melanie again.
Somos personas de buen corazón. Somos personas humildes. Humildes, personas humildes que vamos con la mente puesta en trabajar. La mente puesta en trabajar por la familia y por algo mejor.
So she's saying they're good-hearted people. They're humble. They're going with their minds set on working for their families and for something better.
Let's go back to Colombia's policies and this so-called welcome mat that you write about, Chip. You report that migrant integration is no longer getting as much support from Colombia's president or financial support from international donors. Why is that happening?
Yeah, the president, his name's Gustavo Petro. He took office in 2022. He inherited the migrant integration effort, and he's never embraced it. He almost never talks about it. He never denounces xenophobia. He hasn't, I believe, since the first month he's been in office. His focus, rather, really has been making peace with several guerrilla groups and paramilitary groups that are still operating in Colombia. And for that, he's really wanted to rebuild relations with mm-hmm. Venezuela, including Nicolás Maduro, the authoritarian president. And he's getting help from Maduro to negotiate peace. I should say, too, Sasha, you mentioned it. The other reason Colombia's migrant integration is running out of steam is a reduction in aid from abroad, especially the United States. Many donor countries have been shifting funds to places like Ukraine, Gaza, South Sudan. Mm-hmm. Some refugee groups in Colombia told me their aid has shrunk over the past year, and they're doing a lot of the work of integration. President Biden's foreign aid proposal for the fiscal year that begins October 1st would provide Colombia its smallest annual U.S. aid package since 2020.
So it sounds like that waning support could be part of the reason why coming to the U.S. is such a draw for Venezuelans in Colombia.
Yeah, that's definitely a reading I'm getting from researchers and migrant advocates. They say if Colombia kept the pedal to the metal on integrating Venezuelans, not nearly as many would migrate all the way to the U.S.
We've been speaking with WBEZ's Chip Mitchell about his recent reporting trip to Colombia, checking in on the South American country's immigration policies, as well as its handling of an influx of Venezuelan migrants. Thank you so much for stopping by, Chip.
My pleasure, Sasha.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
Let's turn now to WBEZ immigration reporter Adriana Cardona Magigad, who's been reporting on the migrant crisis here in Chicago. Hey, Adriana.
Hey, Sasha.
Good to see you. You were listening to my conversation with Chip, and I'm curious, when you hear about the way that Colombia's government has responded to this increase in migrants, how would you say it compares to the response that we've been seeing here in the U.S.?
Yeah, well, first I want to acknowledge that there have definitely been efforts here in the city. The city so far has invested some $400 million in offering shelter, food, There's just so much that's being coordinated in a very short period of time. But when I think about what cities in the United States, especially Chicago, have done, I feel like it has not gone enough to address the underlying issue of why what migrants need at this moment.
Why they're coming here in the first place.
Exactly, which is, you know, for whatever reason, whether they are fleeing persecution, violence, or, you know, they're not doing well financially in their home country, they need to be stable. They need to, the part of that stability comes with being able to work, being able to access, being able to buy food, being able to provide for yourself. It's kind of like it's what every human being needs, right? So the way Colombia first, during the first years, and I've known this for so many years because I have family who migrated to Venezuela in the 70s. Then they had to migrate back to Colombia about more than 10 years ago when Venezuela started the economy started collapsing. My aunt had a grocery store like a little grocery corner shop in Venezuela, and she no longer could keep up with the demands from the government and just so much.
Yeah.
So they left everything, went to Colombia. And I remember when they were part of all these efforts to integrate, you know, my family or like her kids and all the Venezuelans that came along with them into the fabric of the Colombian economy. And to this day, they haven't migrated to anywhere else. They're there, they're working, they're studying, they're there. And in the United States, I feel like, especially with the restrictive policies that have been also in place. So in one hand, there are, you know, there's financial aid being approved to address this humanitarian crisis. But it doesn't address the issue that, you know, people come here to fulfill an American dream, right?
Right.
And they want to have work permits. They want to have some sort of legal path to be able to do it legally. No one goes to Colombia to live the Colombian dream, right? That's not a thing. They go because they're looking for a different place. But the United States has done this for years and years and years and years, welcome immigrants from all over the world in one way or the other with different paths to legal work. And but lately, since 1986, with the Immigration Reform Act, it really has not been able to provide a comprehensive solution for the so many immigrants and migrants that are coming here. And I will say the Biden administration did have an extended temporary protected status for some migrants, mostly from Venezuela or a few other countries. And also expanded through humanitarian paroles, you know, and so some migrants have been able to get some work permits, but
not all.
And so we have this issue being kind of like perpetuated, the problem. And yes, you can approve more aid and more millions, but as long as you don't really consider the root of the problem, we're not going to get too far.
Well, you talked about the federal level there as it comes to work permits, but you recently spoke to an Illinois lawmaker who said that she's exploring the possibility of a change in state law to try to open up work permits for migrants and all undocumented workers. Is that right?
Well, states are having to get creative. Work permits for immigrants is a federal issue. So states cannot just give a work permit to immigrants, even if they wanted to, right? So they have to get like this, you know, like the federal government has to approve that. But some states, given the inaction, are starting to submit proposals to draft bills. New York has done that. Utah is in the process of doing that. Yes, it's an uphill battle, and they might get legal challenges. But while Illinois has been a welcoming state, and for example, they have driver licenses for undocumented immigrants. There's been this question that I've been asking, like, where are you when it comes to state work permits?
Mm-hmm.
And so I recently spoke with the state representative Lisa Hernandez, who said that she doesn't want to stop where, you know, she's just drafting a resolution or just waiting around Biden, that she's definitely exploring possibilities of perhaps introducing a bill. She's also looking and watching Utah closely.
Yeah.
It's a Republican state, and that's thinking creatively about how they can incorporate their undocumented community into their economy, not the underground economy, but their economy.
Yeah. So we're all on the same page, Adriana. Set the scene. What are the latest numbers here in Chicago? How many migrants live here now? And are we expecting that number to go up?
Okay, so far we've had maybe more than 43,000 migrants coming to Chicago. But a lot of these people, you know, like many have stayed here. Some of them have moved to other states. I hear people, it's just this number is flowing. So,
and we're talking about since August of 2022.
Since August of 2022, the number of migrants staying in shelters has declined a lot. It's now, you know, like some 6,798 people. That number keeps changing across 17 active shelters. So the city has closed a lot of shelters. They used to have like 28 mm-hmm. plus, and it now has 17. So
where have these people gone? Have they found housing?
Well, yes, and it's been an uphill battle there too. A lot of people has been able to, you know, a lot of people have been able to find housing. They got some people qualify for this rent assistance program through the state. Some migrants are having to just kind of like figure it out on their own. But again, without the ability to have a stable job, again because of this lack of permits and all of that. People are, you know, whether they have help or not, they may be able to cover the first few months of rent. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's really hard for them to keep up.
I've talked to a number of immigration advocates on the show, especially in this time frame over the past 2 years. And many are framing it as a housing crisis rather than a migrant crisis. Would you agree?
Well, just imagine Chicago already had a housing crisis for its current residents, many low-income residents. Imagine we have all these people who they want to work. They want to be able to provide for themselves. But again, they go out there. And not only that, they're talking to landlords, right? Whether they get the assistance or not, they have leases. But then they find more family members, or they want to help this other migrant family that's about to get evicted from the shelter or may not have a place to be. They bring them in. They broke the contract. And then they start facing evictions or problems with the landlords because initially in the contract, there were supposed to be six migrants. And now you have 12 migrants mm-hmm. living in there. So it's creating a lot of tension right now. Yeah. There is a housing crisis boiling.
There's
right now.
A housing crisis, and we have a recent uptick in Chicago's homelessness population, too. I mean, is this contributing to that uptick, you think?
I'll tell you this. I absolutely agree. We are already starting to see the summer families camping with their children in parks across the city, and there are few I've been hearing, and these families, some of the mutual aid volunteers are trying to convince them to go back to the landing zone where migrants can reapply for a shelter bed. But some of the people I spoke with are not really thrilled about the idea of going back to the shelter system because they face a lot of humiliation, according to them, and also like xenophobia, and just they just don't want to have to deal with that again. And they also feel like they are, you know, they just feel a sense of like shame for having to return to that system.
That is WBEZ immigration reporter Adriana Cardona Magigad. Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Patrick Smith and Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Meha Ahmed and mixed by Linnea Dominic and Max Lubers. Subscribe to our podcast for more conversations like these, or check out our full archive at wbez.org/reset. You can find more stories from the Democracy Solutions Project on the websites of WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.